Hey, don't forget this month, enroll in any MAPS
all
bundle.
All month long.
Any MAPS
That's
bundle.
That's right.
You have the Sexy Athlete bundle that melds MAPS performance with MAPS aesthetic. You have the Build Your Butt bundle where we teach you how to get your glutes to fire.
Hell yeah.
So that you can really build them with your squats and deadlifts, and it combines MAPS anabolic with MAPS aesthetic. Or the Cadillac. The best one, the RGB bundle.
The sexiest of all.
This is MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, MAPS Aesthetic, all lined out, all planned out for you. 9 months of exercise programming.
Game changer.
But I don't know what to do.
Now you do.
Enroll in any of those, and here's what you get this month only. You get to pick your choice, any guide we offer.
That's right.
For free. We have the Nutrition Survival Guide. We have the Fasting Guide. We have the Occlusion Guide. Pick any of those for free. And on top of that, here's the cherry on top. How do you guys like
what
that?
What is it?
Tell us, Sal.
You can pick any MAPS t-shirt for free. So we'll give you all that stuff for free.
Absolutely stanky.
Free.
Listen, mindpumpmedia.com. Always fuck that one up. Mindpumpmedia.com. Here's what you do, by the way, when you enroll in a bundle. You need to send an email to admin@mindpumpmedia.com. Send your address. Send your emails or your name so we know who you are, your size, your shirt size, and what guide you want so you can get all those free awesome things.
Excellent, Sal.
We do in the review contest giveaways.
Yes, indeed.
How many reviews, Doug? Give it to us straight.
We have reached new heights, guys.
Whoa, you guys already started. Whoa.
Slow down. 32 reviews.
Boom.
Holy
boom
shit.
Week, wait. 32 reviews.
We got to give out some shirts then.
32?
How many shirts are we giving away?
Nine.
By the way, shirts. You know why these reviews are coming in
Holy
fast and furious? Because there's two reasons why. Number one.
Yeah, here we go.
Number one, because we're the best podcast on earth.
Okay.
Amen.
Number two, because we're telling people how to leave a review because it's such a pain in the ass to figure out
I
how to leave a
that's
review
what it is
on
it,
iTunes.
Is it natural for you to just to take credit for everything, or do you actually have to actively think about it?
I said we.
Do you?
We. Do you feel threatened every time I say shit?
We with a capital M.
Yeah, listen.
You didn't say he summoned it, though, Adam. You got to give him credit for
that. Listen, yeah, listen. This is how you leave a review if you want to your chance at winning a free t-shirt. By the way, 9 shirts out of 32 reviews, it's a pretty damn good odds of winning.
Absolutely.
We're generous for generous people leaving reviews.
This is what you do. You go on your phone, you go to the podcast icon, you click on it, go to search. At the top, type in Mind Pump, 2 words. I don't care if you're subscribed or not. You still got to do it this way. Hit search. Our little icon pops up. Click on our icon, and right underneath it, there's 3 tabs. The middle one says reviews. Click on that, and then you can leave a review, and if we like it, you'll win a free t-shirt. Who won?
All right, we got 9 winners.
Tell us, Douglas.
Starting with Chris Ellis 21.
Badass.
Okay.
Jim Cardoza.
Here we go.
AISFN.
Super.
Some
hot
acronym that's worth something.
Yeah. AISFN.
That's
yeah. AEOF 1921. Jimbo Sipper. Body Rocks 365. Shast 1010. B. Fawcett.
Blake Fawcett.
Oh, I know
he finally wins a t-shirt?
For sure.
This is the first time he's won on a review.
Second favorite homosexual. I like this guy.
And our final.
Who's first, Justin?
Okay.
Our final is Tasmanian Lifter.
You guys all win free t-shirts. How do they get their shirts, Doug?
Get them, Douglas.
Send the name I just read to itunes@mindpumpmedia.com, your shirt size, your shipping address, and we'll get that right out to you.
Good job, guys.
Just spin around in circles and throw weights?
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Do you love me?
I can always spark you. You do.
Do you love me,
Justin? Do you realize that I'm your
muse,
your creative
muse
spark?
Yeah.
Now that I can dance,
Welcome to the Sal and Justin Show. We're waiting for Adam to get back on the.
He
mic
just texts all day long
because he's talking to people trying to put together
Hello
new products
I'm
and t-shirts
on Instagram
and shit.
Doug got
I'm
me
so
a new
cool
filter.
Doug what?
Doug got me a new filter.
Oh, the pop filter.
I see.
It's so much nicer.
It's not all limp.
It's not limp.
Yeah, you're having problems.
He gave
there
it to our guest, I see. Yeah. So our guest gets the shitty
Adam
pop filter.
Adam was always flaccid. It was a problem.
They say that your mic is like you are, their owner.
It's an extension.
Like it's like a dog, you know, like your dog is like your owner.
They say
the
that
mic
about,
is like
they say that
owner
about a mic.
Just a,
they do
a noodle.
And if you look at me and Justin's mics.
Very erect.
Hard.
Yeah.
Very hard.
Granite.
Yours?
Yeah.
less hard.
Less hard.
A little slippery.
It's
a little,
softer.
A little noodly.
It's, but it's moldable.
Okay.
It goes in different directions.
Hey, what did you guys, what did you think about yesterday's seminar? We took a different turn this time around. What did you guys think?
I like hearing our
new message.
Everyone's so hard on themselves, so I like to hear, actually, I'm probably the hardest when it comes to that shit, but let's hear you guys talk positive, then I'll talk shit about us.
You are a dick. I think we are coming, what's coming together now is our direction.
Like butt cheeks, like our, Adam says always.
Like our, it's going to be our talk, our brand, it's who we are. It's starting to come forward because our first seminars were really just informative, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine, but I want people to leave our seminars feeling changed. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want them to leave and I want them to completely change how they view nutrition and exercise and how they approach those things. I don't want them to leave and say, oh, that was cool information, or wow, I learned a little bit. You're going to get that, but I want people to leave being like, holy fuck, I was fundamentally altered from that seminar. And I
think we've changed your perspective.
Yes, we are getting there.
Yeah.
I want to take your channel, whatever channel you're stuck on, and I want to change your channel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want to just give you more.
Jesus. Well, and I like that we haven't, well, okay, I know we're going on a positive tint here, but you know, I definitely like that we went in a little bit more of the inspirational route, because like we overinform all the time, I feel, and that's what the podcast is great for, because we can elaborate on that topic for, you know, a longer amount of time. And I just feel like when we get into that mentality, when we're speaking live, it just becomes like, rah, 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 and we're just like hammering all these points, but it just feels like there's so much to cover. Whereas if we can just whittle it down to these like life lessons and things that like are the, you know, the top things to focus on, I think that's really going to help people more.
I think we've identified. So the previous seminar that we did before this one, we started it similar to what all of our seminars used to be, right? It was informative. We were talking about nutrition and exercise and good information. And we were kind of dispelling myths in the fitness industry.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through, we kind of went on a little bit of a tangent and struck some nerves. And I could tell, I don't know about you guys, but I can really get a sense of the shift in energy from the crowd. And the energy changed. And you could see the looks on their faces shifted. And people started nodding. And some people started laughing. Not because we were being funny, but because they started realizing a lot of the different things about themselves. That happened
seminar. It's like we're going right into their living room and watching them.
Yeah, and it happened the seminar before. And this one, we understood that and we kind of focused on that. And you could see that it was a different connection and people were leaving with different ideas. And we're able to hammer home our message that we talk about a lot on the show, but we're really able to do it in a one-hour period and get people kind of think of things differently. And we're nowhere near, don't get me wrong.
This was just us kind of spitballing a bit, this brand new idea and this new format. And obviously we need to sharpen up hone in on these points.
I think 50 more of these and we're going to be ready for coliseums and shit like that. But I don't think we're anywhere near, you know, maybe I'm a little confident, but I don't think we're anywhere near.
You say that until Adam like chimes in here.
That's why he's
waiting.
That's
why I'm waiting. I don't know about coliseum, dude.
The only time Adam's quiet.
Let's do the gym scene
first. Is when he's waiting to talk shit. Yeah.
I think it's important though that I consistently talk shit even about ourselves. I mean, I think that's what makes I think that's what makes it okay. I think if you were somebody who talks shit about other people and all you did was glorify yourself and like I'm self righteous.
No, it's true. We're equal opportunity shit talkers.
I think I'm much harder on us, and I have much higher expectations for us than I do anybody else in the fitness industry. And I had a lot of people come up to me afterwards and said, oh my God, they've been to several already. And they're like, that was my favorite. That was awesome. I really like the direction you guys are going with this. And man, more people need to be talking. So I got tons of feedback. I had family in town that had never seen us live before. They've listened to the show plenty and stuff, but then they were totally impressed. They loved it. And I said, you know, it was all right. I said, we're still getting in our groove, because this was the first time we kind of went this direction. So I think after we've done a few like that, I think it'll get better. You know, and then when I try to explain to everybody was like really pumped and excited that was talking to me. I said, listen, Sal is so much better than that. I said, So when he is on fire, it gets
it's me, contagious.
Right? I get inspired. Yeah. Like I literally, like when I know he is when he's on his.
It doesn't feel like I'm a compliment. Like,
well, that when I said that's when it you guys know. Think that was really good and that was like solid, like a C plus. You know, when he is on his like serious, when he's A plus material, it takes the whole. Sometimes I catch myself like captivated by what he's saying and sucked in. And when I know he gets me like that, it takes me to this whole new level of getting like fired up. And and then we just do this dynamic. And there was a couple times yesterday I felt that happen. But I also felt like it took 20 to 30 minutes before we hit that where I'd actually like to improve on how we come out. Like I want that. I want to right away give that.
And it takes practice, dude. It's going to take practice. It's going to take us. It's going to take us honing our skill.
Yeah, we're not quite ready for Madison Square Garden.
No, speaking in front of people is different than speaking on a microphone, and it's different than being on video, and it's all different, right? But as you hone your skill and get better, what you're doing, you're able to impact people with more power. And that's the idea. When you talk to people in person for an hour, you have 1 hour to make a difference. You really do. And it doesn't happen with just giving people information. It happens with emotion. It happens with inspiration. It happens with passion. It happens with when you're fundamentally changing how they view themselves and think of things. What you're trying to light a spark, because inside everybody is a pool of gasoline, and if you light the right spark, you'll set that person on fire, and they leave that seminar and things, it's like dominoes, things change, and that's the goal. That's what you want to do when you speak in front of people, but that's not an easy thing to do. And I don't care how good your information is.
Well,
we just got to get you more preachy.
You got to practice. You got to get good. And every seminar I've ever done, and I have zero problem talking in front of people, but the problem is every seminar I ever did for fitness was informative. I never did seminars where I got to come up there
and be inspirational
and really, really just trying to change.
It's totally different dynamic.
And so this is different, but it's good. It's starting to happen.
Well, it's also, here's the thing that I think that is the greatest challenge is that when we had the podcast, and the podcast we spent, over a year of building credibility and creating ourselves as an authority in the fitness industry.
Just timing and all that stuff.
Yeah, it so that takes time, right? And then now we go into a room. Now, mind you, the reason why our listeners probably are wondering too, like, what? We don't promote our seminars. We don't talk about it. We actually go into companies that hire us to go in and do these talks for like health fairs or private like things like Orange Theory holds just with your Orange. So mostly all Orange Theory members. So right now, a good half or more than half the people in our audience have never even heard us before. So there's this new dynamic of you have an hour and a half or so to create yourself as an authority and then deliver this inspiring message and informative and educational at the same time.
Yeah, and I just can't say balls right away. I have to warm people up.
Scare the shit out of them.
It does. So exactly. It's a little bit, I think in the future when we start doing the big events where we are promoting it on the podcast and we go into towns and we say, hey, we're here in Austin, Texas on this date, and then now most all the guests will be people that have heard the show for a long time. I think those will be a total different tone because we won't have to spend the first 30 minutes of it getting people to understand how long we've been doing this for and that, what I'm saying? Like I feel like we have to do so much of that right now to really get you bought into whatever we're talking about before we can get into the message or into inspiring people. So that's definitely a unique challenge, I feel like, that we're dealing with the seminars in comparison to the other forms or platforms we utilize.
Well, the message
now
that we talk about on Mind Pump that resonates very strongly with people really has to do with changing how you view your body, changing your relationship to food, right? Changing your relationship to exercise, looking at the real important things and focusing on that, and then finding that fitness, health, and leanness and all that stuff becomes a side effect of really fundamentally changing how you approach these things. And that's the message that we're trying to give across or put across to these people. It's not a message that's necessarily groundbreaking. I think people have heard it before. Some of our techniques and the way we present them is unique, and we do have unique aspects of how you approach these things that I don't think I've ever heard anybody really talk about. But a lot of communication isn't the words you say, it's how you say them. And I know for a fact, and I've known this because I've been a trainer for a long time, because I've been in the fitness industry for 20 years, that nothing changes unless someone's emotional about it. Nothing changes unless someone feels inspired.
Yeah.
That's the impetus that starts things off.
But it is a different message that we're saying.
It is.
Like, and that's the important part why I think that we're onto something, because it needs to reflect a mission statement that is Mind Pump. Like, people know this, you know, this way of thinking because it's our flavor. It's what we've come to conclude. And so we actually have a bit more, you know, we can identify and kind of define that a little better now. We're getting closer to that, to where it's like, okay, this is distinctly Mind Pump in their message.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. As we've continued doing the show, the three of us, and I like sharing this with the audience because the audience, I like including them in our growth, mm-hmm. in how we've evolved. It's very important for me that you as listeners understand this, because you can see then that, A, we may be considered quote-unquote authorities, but we are not the be-all, end-all, you know, smartest, know-everything kind of people. In fact, I implore you to question mm-hmm. everything that we tell you. I implore you to not follow blindly. We don't want, you know, blind sheep following us, because that is part of the problem. We want you to think for yourselves and question things. We want you to discover things for yourself, because that's the only place that change truly happens. That's the road that leads to long-term longevity, health, wellness. That's the road that leads to making being healthy, fit, lean, all those things become effortless, is if you go in that direction. And we grow quite a bit. In fact, these seminars are a reflection of how we've grown, and we're striking a nerve. You know, I just did a post on Instagram literally 2 hours ago, as I'm recording this episode. 2 hours ago, I did a post on IIFYM and how I think it's crap, and how I think, or we think, it can lead to eating disorders, different types of eating disorders, but nonetheless, bad relationships to food and eating disorders. And boy, did I strike a nerve.
Yep.
Within a very short period of time. And you got people on there tagging people and people commenting and pissing some people off. And, you know, one of the things I said on that post was, if you see someone on Instagram who has IIFYM in their bio, the high odds are that the vast majority of the pictures on their page are going to be of bad food, are going to be of binge eating, are going to be of poor eating habits. And
food pornography.
And sure enough, people are getting tagged and getting angry with me and yelling at me or whatever. I click on their picture. There's one guy, and I'm not going to say his name. I do not want people to go after him. I think, you know, he's got a right to post whatever he wants. He's just an example of what we're talking about. But you go on his page, and it's literally binge eating. Mm-hmm. It is literally eating disorder. The only difference is he looks lean. There's no difference from him. Because
he keeps his calories in point.
Because he keeps his calories in point, and, you know, and he's identified that makes it okay to promote this kind of lifestyle. If you look further into this guy, he used to be overweight. So what he's done is he's taken his addiction to food and he's just changed it and pointed it in a different direction. But he's still got this addiction going on, and it's still an unhealthy relationship. And he's promoting it to his, you know, 100,000, you know, fans and followers. But we've really started to strike a nerve. But you got to understand, as listeners, this position that we're taking now is really starting to take hold with us. Mm-hmm. Because when we first started Mind Pump, we all knew IIFYM was a kind of a cultish, stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we really didn't truly understand the potential negative impact of constantly tracking everything for the rest of your life. We didn't truly understand how that could turn into not just poor relationships with food, but it could turn into eating disorders until we started Mind Pump, until we started diving into
things. Well, you see all the firsthand accounts that kind of like relay their story and like, you know, some of the problems that have come through that.
Dude, I've got people I'm helping, you know, doing the, you know, online, and they are, some of them are ex-competitors or competitors, current ones. And I know, Adam, you've been in this world for much longer than me, this whole competitive world, but I'm shocked. I am shocked. It is crazy what I'm working with
well,
here,
I
have to take so many steps back with them, because
you now know what my frustration has been for the last almost 2 years now, because before that I didn't realize how bad it was either, and you're more shocked because of who it is, right? I mean, these are the people that, like I said, so many people aspire to be like them because they're in phenomenal shape, right? And they're competing, and some of them competing at the professional level. So people are so amazed by their discipline to get to that point, and they all aspire to be like that one day. But in reality, what people don't understand is literally, and I'm talking 80, 90% of these people have eating disorders, a majority of them, not like some of them or a few of them or maybe have most of them have some sort of an eating disorder, and most of them are unaware of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's become this popular thing to do.
I feel so bad too. I used to get angry and talk shit, but now I feel bad. No, like I see it and it's
easy to get sucked in. I'm not gonna lie. Like the last time I had a Pop-Tart was probably when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And just being around the fitness competing world, they're so popular, and with the whole fit your macros bullshit and everybody be using them for quick carbs and quick sugar, that I remember like catching myself like, I gotta try these. I haven't had these since I was 5. I gotta know what this whole crave is about. And it tastes like fucking cardboard. But I get what happens. If you can get my attention to even make me go out there to want to do that, then I realize, what is this doing to everybody else that are unaware, that already are unaware of what it is that they're really consuming and really what the long-term effects could possibly be of eating processed foods and artificial sweeteners and doing that on a regular basis. And you've got these people that are super fit that are showing you that, look, you can do this too and still look like this. So people are starting to connect that, and it's the wrong dots.
Dude,
it's the wrong direction.
I actually had this conversation with my girlfriend yesterday. We were going through Instagram, and I like to keep my finger on the pulse of different aspects of the fitness industry, everything from the meditative side to the yoga people to the power lifters, the strength athletes, whatever, and even the bodybuilders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't that long ago that I would look at a picture of a pro bodybuilder, and I would think to myself, like, fuck, that looks cool. Or, God, I wish I could look like that naturally. Or if I could do that naturally, God, that would be fucking awesome. This shift happened to me not that long ago. And I really, before I say what I'm going to say, I'm not trying to talk shit about anybody that does this. I'm not talking shit about these people whatsoever. The difference is my perception, my consciousness has shifted. And it's this fundamental shift that has happened to me where I look at these pictures now of these super muscular, ripped dudes who are posing on Instagram that I used to look at and go, God, that looks cool. Or, wow, look how fucking massive his back is or his quads are. And you know what I see now? All I see now is body dysmorphia. Mm. That's all I see now. I look at it now and I think to myself, like, fuck, man, that dude is suffering and he doesn't even know it. Like, he doesn't know.
Because it becomes a compulsion.
Yeah, it becomes a compulsion. He doesn't know, and I know this because I used to be that guy.
Yeah,
I look at old pictures of myself when I used to bulk.
They can totally identify.
And I'd get my body weight up to 225, 230, and I look at them, and I see sickness now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I didn't even.
You thought that was like the pinnacle, the ultimate fit.
I couldn't see it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird, and I'm not doing this to judge people. I promise you, and that's why I'm almost like careful even saying this. It's just, it shifted my perception to the point now where I see the underlying issues.
Well, it's like, what are our idols, as far as like the fitness community and your average person that idolizes certain types of people, that they want to aspire to or just are inspired by, and so it's a tough conversation when you try to like inform them about what they really do to become that and show and portray that and like what is actually behind the scenes of their day-to-day eating schedule and drug intake and all these different things that it's a big part of their life at that point.
If you're doing something that completely consumes your life to the point where it impacts your relationships with people, it impacts your career, it impacts everything to the point where that becomes the only thing. And you know what I'm talking about if you're listening. You know that it alters. You get anxiety when you got to go to a birthday party. You get anxiety when you're going to a pool party and you got to take your shirt off or put a bikini on. You get, fearful. You actually avoid things because you avoid events. You avoid relationships. You avoid all these different things with important people in your life because it runs, smack dab against your obsession with how you look. you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not perfect by any, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. And if you are in that boat, I am not criticizing you whatsoever. But hopefully I'm sparking something in you. And it can maybe in the future move you in the right direction, because here's what's going to happen. You are not going to be able to stay doing this forever. I promise you, there will be a point where you're either going to realize it yourself, or you're going to be forced to realize it. You know, I have a friend who, growing up, you know, in our late teens and 20s, I mean, the guy was a maniac, right? He was, you know, he did every steroid known to man, growth hormone, you know, was obsessed with eating and did all this crazy stuff and looked ridiculous. I mean, the guy took his shirt off and he just looked, he could have walked, he never competed, but he was just
impressive,
silly, muscular, crazy. I was super, you know, impressed with him back then when I'd look at this guy. The guy now is almost to the point now where he needs a kidney transplant. And he is now, his philosophy now is very in line with what I'm talking about. He was forced. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was forced to understand where he was. And he says it now. I talk to the guy now. Well, he's like, he goes, I didn't realize how bad I was. I was just so sucked up in it that I didn't realize it. So, you know, it's... I don't know, man.
It's why we're so passionate about it, because we know that. I mean, it's so hard until you absolutely have to, until you get diagnosed with something, or until some autoimmune comes up, and even then, most people don't connect those dots, because I didn't connect those dots. So I feel like we're so passionate about it because not only have we experienced it ourselves, but we've had hundreds, probably thousands now of clients that have gone through this transition in their life. And unfortunately, it's always when something serious happens, a cancer comes, you know, or all of a sudden you have this autoimmune issue come up out of nowhere, or you've got chronic this, or you're allergic to this. Like, all of a sudden that is what finally makes you go,
forces you to stop and then assess everything.
Yes. And then you wake up and you go, fuck, you mean all those two rockstar colas and, you know, bar I was doing every single day for 10 years. Mm-hmm. I guess it did do something, you know, and this whole time I put that in the health category as a healthy choice. You
Dude,
know,
I'll never forget. Right. There was a trainer that worked for me years ago. So I was like, this is when I first became a fitness manager. So I was 18 years old. And I had this trainer that worked for me. And he was a competitive bodybuilder. I can't even remember his name, but he was massive. And he would tell me, and he would tell some of the other trainers, like, you know what? I don't give a fuck, man. When I die, I don't care when I die, but when I die, they're going to have to take two caskets and put them together, because I'm not going to fit in one. That's how big I'm going to be. And you know what's funny? Everybody thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, this motherfucker's hardcore. I mean, but you know what? That's a very sad place to be.
Yeah.
That's a very, very sad place to
be. Well, and you say this really well, because I've heard people come back and be like, we're all going to die. We don't know when we're going to die. We could all be taken off the earth tomorrow. And I don't want to stress my whole life worrying about eating this or not eating that. But what people don't realize is what the quality of your life that you are living, whether it be one day or the next 40
years. That's what's important.
Is learning to connect that, because... And that's what we're trying to help people. It's like, listen, we're not trying to demonize something. We're not trying to say this is the only way. We're just trying to help you become aware.
Yeah. Yeah.
Become aware of when you do eat this way for a long period of time. Let me tell you, sure, it may look okay on the scale. Sure, it may make you look okay in the mirror. But it's the insides that shit's happening that you don't understand and you can't put your finger on quite yet until something big happens. And then it's like, oh, shit, maybe it was because of that. Well, instead of waiting till then, why not try and work yourself into making better choices now that are going to benefit you not only long term, but even currently, right now, your current mood, your current energy levels, your current strength, your current skin, your current hair, all those things now. Why not start making those choices now and heading in that direction until you have something that you can't get rid of?
And by the way, this isn't just relegated to people who are ripped and shredded and, you know, go that route. Like, I know people who are the super wellness route. That, like, super wellness, like everything has to be like super raw, organic, grown from this and that. And they too have an unhealthy relationship to food. It's actually called orthorexia, I believe, which is this obsession with health. Everything has to be super healthy.
Nothing's good enough unless it's like this extreme version of it.
That is another direction that is not good. You don't want to live that way because you could become trapped within it. The reality is, it's all about the root where all of this is coming from. And when you become aware, like Adam's saying, you become very, very aware and you connect the dots and you read the signals and you put everything together, your motivation is such that it becomes effortless. Yeah. It is not something you obsess about.
That takes
and that's what we're talking about.
A lot of self-reflection.
It takes
takes moments out of your day to really assess yourself.
Exactly.
And that's why it's so important that, you know, even we don't really stress the importance of meditation a lot, but when we do, it's really about like listening to your body, listening to these signals and these different things that your body's already telling you. And, you know, taking time to really be mindful when you're eating and really understand what you're putting in your body and just, you know, like slowing down because we are in a hustle. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in a hustle to produce or to make a living or, you know, some kind of like demand in their schedule. And, you know, just stopping and scheduling stopping in your day.
You know,
is going to do a big,
you know, I just read a statistic the other day. Americans throw away something like 30% of our food or something ridiculous like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is also an example of not being aware. I mean, think about all of the things that we could solve with simple awareness. And we're talking about food and nutrition and exercise because that's what we talk about. But that extends to everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, I wish people would just make the connection with IFYM. And that the relationship that you're creating with food is what you're playing right into what they want you to. They see that you have this, you know, this desire for donuts or this desire for Pop-Tarts or these treats and things that you want. And nobody wants a diet that tells you can't have the things you already love to intake or you're already addicted to. Mm-hmm. So the reason why it's so brilliantly successful is because they found a way to give you that.
Yeah.
They found a way to tell you, listen, you don't have to get rid of those things. No. You don't have to cut those foods out of your diet. You can be in shape and you can be healthy by doing that. And all we're trying to tell people is that, listen, it's not that you can't be in shape. You can be in shape, but it's not the best way to get healthy. And every successful diet, this is what they do, the peanut butter diet. You know, it's like they created the pizza diet. They create a diet around something, and all they're really doing is playing into your weakness. And you just have to see that from a marketing perspective.
They're
like,
telling you that
wake the fuck up, dude. Yeah. Like anything already that has the word diet afterwards, I'm already anti. Like, yeah. I don't care how good it is or not good for it. If it says,
well, you're giving it a lot of power. If you think about it, you know, that thought process of I can't get into that diet because I really like Oreos. And I mean, I really like it. Like I'm giving all this power to Oreos in my life, you know? Like, right. And so now I'm scheduling all of my macros around me just being able to have these stupid Oreos. Like you give a shit that much about Oreos.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just like porn. What the? But porn's better.
Oh my.
What are the macros of the bird?
Queen Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Chimera Quaw.
Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-quaw.
All right, our first question is from C. Stauff 22. I don't think you guys would look the way you do today if you followed your current dogma throughout your early 20s and 30s. I think a priority to build muscle is necessary to build size.
Oh.
I know why Sal picked this.
I love this question.
Motherfucker said, refer to us as dogma.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah, we're starting a religion, apparently. Yeah.
Let's be clear.
I like it.
Let's be very,
I
very...
Wasn't the deal we all made...
I thought we were going to wait on that.
Well, I thought we agreed that we were all going after all the fucking dogmas. Yeah. I'm not trying to create one.
Yeah. Right. Let's be very clear. We're not... We're actually the anti... you know, anti-dogma. We go against the dogma that's preached when it comes to fat loss and muscle gain. And there's a lot of different ways you can eat to become very healthy. There's a lot of different ways you can exercise for longevity and health. There are general principles and truths, but the variances within those can be dramatic. And the variances from individual to individual can be dramatic. there's going to be people out there who are going to eat a vegan diet, and that is going to work so well for them. It's going to make them so healthy, and they're going to live a long, healthy life with excellent athletic performance and all these wonderful things. And then you got another guy could eat the exact same way, and it could be an absolute disaster. So to say that we have a dogma, I think you're missing the point. Our dogma is anti-dogma. That's number one. Number two, the would we have as much muscle and strength and look the way we do?
No, we'd have
if
more.
Exactly.
I'd have a lot more, trust me.
The truth, yeah, I was going to say, if I It'd swear to God, jacked. Man, if I had a fucking time machine,
I know.
Besides playing the lottery numbers,
God,
if
I
could
wish
go,
I'd listen to myself.
Yeah, if I could go back in time to myself in my teens and 20s and give myself workouts and this is how you should eat and don't do this kind of bullshit, today I would have no gut issues. My autoimmune issues would be a lot better. I wouldn't have had shoulder surgery on my left shoulder. Mm-hmm. I'd be stronger.
I would have moved better. I'd be stronger. Yeah. I would look better.
I would be so far ahead.
Do you understand where he's trying to categorize us right now,
of
right?
Course. Like,
so you understand that this and where this is stemming from is the mentality of the beast mode and like training to failure and all the things that he's probably came across, whether he's read it somewhere or someone's told it to him, that this you got to get
this
there
is the only way you build
to
muscle.
Grow. Yeah, if you want to grow and you want to have gains, you got to train. You got to train beast mode.
4,000 calories, bro.
No days off, and you just got to beat it up to get there. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. No,
it could not be further from the truth.
Not only is it not true, it's so opposite. Like I said, if I could go back in time and inform myself, my God, would I be so much better off today and look better, and I'd probably have more muscle. I built muscle in spite of all the wrong shit that I did, not because of it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think he's under the impression that all that shitty information, the eat so much protein that you shit literally a piece of brick, eat 8 meals a day, do your body part splits, go to failure, beat yourself up, take every supplement known to man. I think he thinks that that's the way to build muscle. And
that's
now the
formula.
Way, yeah, and the way we talk now is to maintain.
Yeah.
Right.
I hate to break argument. This to you, but whatever.
Bullshit. My biggest gains have happened in the last 4 years of my life.
I was just going to say.
And that's crazy. People don't understand how much harder that is.
Yeah.
If you've been training for 10, 15 years and you're 35, 38 years old like we are, it is much harder to make. And anybody who's 35, 38 years old and been lifting for 15 years will tell you this. The gains are very small and incremental after you've been training for that long. But I'll tell you right now, I've made better gains in the last 4 years than I made in my previous 10 because of the knowledge that I have.
You can get away with so much more when you're in your 20s. Yeah. I mean, you're most impressionable. I mean, it's almost critical that you establish the right patterns and the right mentality, because then that's going to carry with you for decades. Because for me, I could tell you that probably within maybe 3-4 years, it was just me battling my own wrong programming that I was doing. You know, I was fighting against my body. Yeah. I was doing everything because I thought everything had to be super intense. And so I would just hammer my body. And then there's periods where I would have to rest and recover because there's so much damage.
I'm really glad that Sal picked this because I feel like, God, even though we've been doing this now for, I don't know, what's the podcast, over 2 years now that we've been doing this. And I'm sure this guy is an avid listener and a fan and everything like that, if he's getting on the Q&A and dropping questions and stuff.
I feel like he just started listening. I feel like his friend had to start listening and he's having a tough time. You know what this is?
Oh, I hope he hasn't been, because I feel like some people have been listening for a long time and they're still stuck.
It just doesn't resonate.
No, yeah, it's still they don't want to break away. They still don't want.
What you see here is this is a classic example of cognitive dissonance. This is a very, very good example of it. He has identified with the way he trains and the way he eats and the way he takes his supplements. He has identified with it so strongly that changing his paradigm, that shifting the way he thinks about those things, means he has to shift who he is. Mm. And this is why you can, this is true. Look, when you try and talk to someone about politics, religion, or about anything where they identify with, it's hard to change because all of a sudden, they're like, well, who am I? Like, if that's not true,
yeah.
I remember when it fucking happened to me, dude. I remember when I first started fasting and I didn't lose shit tons of muscle. I was like, what? I have been living a fucking lie.
Yeah.
I've been preaching lies to my clients for over a decade. It was a earth-shattering moment for me, and if you are not open to it, it is painful. I mean, imagine this. Imagine if, I don't know, scientists discover that this reality is fucking, it's completely false, and we're all like the Matrix. We're all stuck in a computer. And imagine if scientists actually revealed that. Hey, everybody, we're all fucking artificially intelligent computer, you know, generated people. And they proved it. Do you know what? Most people would fucking refuse to believe it.
Be like 90%.
Yeah, they'd be like, fuck that, you're wrong. And they take those scientists and they'd kill them.
Yeah.
So, and that's an extreme, obviously an extreme case. But I think this guy... Yeah,
He wanted to say that.
Yeah, I think...
Because he still believes that.
No, I don't. But if I had evidence of that shit, most people wouldn't. I think this guy's...
I believe they're Romulans, too.
I think there's cognitive dissonance going on. I think he's listened to a few episodes of us, and he's like, fuck, man, this can't be true.
Oh, that gives me
hope. I've been wrong for so long.
That gives me hope, then. That gives me hope. If he's only listened to a handful of episodes, then maybe that's where he's at right now. Yeah. Because I feel like we've...
We need some time under tension.
I feel like we beat the shit out of this horse already. Like, we're clear. You've already talked about all the gut flora fucking studies. We've already brought on people like Dom DiAgostino. We've already brought, you know, Terry Walls on. We've already brought these brilliant minds that are studying this stuff that are way beyond these other idiots that are still promoting things like IIFYM, because those people are doing it because it puts fucking money in their pocket, not because it's good science. Yeah. And they're putting out
good for you.
They're putting out their science and information that supports their argument, not good science that's evolving and then teaching us about our body that we're just now learning about. Like, if you're preaching or you're arguing to back up IIFYM, you're an idiot. You are. Sorry, I'm gonna call you all out. You're an idiot if you're arguing IIFYM, because we're beyond that. We're already past this. Now, if you use that to get yourself into better shape and you're listening to this,
if that's one of the steps you took,
that's a step. Yeah. That's where that is okay. I'm not hating on that person for doing that. In fact, I think that's awesome. But don't stop there.
Transition now.
Don't stop there. And the reason why we attack IIFYM like IIFYM so much is because of that. Because that becomes a dogma. That becomes a way of like eating, and that everybody starts saying that no, that was some steps that you took in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, anything that teaches you to be mindful of your food and you have to pay attention or track, I am a fan of. I don't give a shit what it is, because that's already the step in the right direction of awareness. You can't become aware until you start paying attention to the things that you're consuming. So I don't give a shit if it's IIFYM or if it's ketogenic or if it's fucking Atkins. It doesn't matter. Those are already better than what you were doing before, because it's now making you aware. But don't stop there. No matter which one of those ones that you're doing, and just because it might have got you in good aesthetic shape or you've lost your 20 or 30 pounds you want to, you're not done.
Well, that's what I mean.
You're not done evolving.
That's what I mean. It's because people identify so strongly with their dogma. We'll use this word against them. With their dogma, that any change in that is it's like cracking through their core. Like, what the fuck am I? I mean, you got to understand that humans, and psychologists have demonstrated this several times, we are constantly striving for internal consistency. And when we present new information that is counter to somebody's identity, you're not just saying to them, hey, your diet is bad for you. You're saying to them, you are not who you think you are. I mean, that's what it is at their root.
Yeah.
It is literally like,
imagine, well, that's why the walls come up so fast.
Imagine this. If someone came in here right now and said to us, we have conclusive evidence, years of studies, conclusive evidence that leg extensions are superior to barbell squats. If this just happened right now and they proved it to us beyond a shadow of a doubt, we would accept it, but it would be very painful for me
to do so.
Because I've completely accepted that squats are superior to leg extensions.
Yeah.
And I believe that, right? But if someone proved that to me, I'd have to go back to the drawing board and be like, well, it looks like I was living a lie.
Yeah, but they make a really, really good argument. It's like, okay, you can't really deny when it's right in front of you.
Yes.
It all stacks up, and like, they really prove every step of like, yes, this is superior to this.
You have to be open.
I give in.
You have to be open to change. That is part of awareness. Aware means that you take a step back and you observe and you look at things for what they are, not what you want them to be. And of course, that sounds very simplistic. And of course, no matter what, there's a subjective element because you yourself are a suggestive. You know, you're a being. You're not, you know, able to step outside completely. But that's what you should strive to do and actually look and see. You know, look at the evidence. Look at the, you know, what's really placed in front of you. Don't judge it. Just look at it and become aware of it, and then watch where that takes you, and be okay with the fact that it might take you away from your strong current beliefs, that it may take you away from a belief system that you've identified with. That is a very difficult thing to do. And that's why talking about nutrition, you might as well be debating someone's fucking religion. Oh, that's God, why yes. Every time I make a nutrition post,
it's very similar.
I piss people off. I might as well go on there and say, you know, this religion is bullshit or whatever. It's no different. Like, I piss people off every single time I talk about nutrition on my Instagram. There's always going to be a slew of people that are going to tell me, you know, you're just being negative, and
but
why can't
you? It worked for me.
Yeah, it worked for me, and this and that. And I'm like, look, you know, that's great that it worked for you, but you know, let's take a step back and look at what where you're at in your evolution, and you're nowhere near where you could be.
I want people to understand too that a part of that we have to do that in order to get the attention, and it's unfortunate, but we do, because I'm just putting out the facts and the science and bringing PhDs on here that talk about where we're at with the gut and microbiomes. It doesn't matter. People still aren't listening. So the whole idea of making a shirt that says, you know, Mind Pump IFI or IIFYM sucks isn't like we're trying to attack or we're trying to be vindictive or all we're trying to do is get attention so we can then educate you on it. That's all it is. And so if you're somebody who is like, you know, because we have these people, right, that are just like positive everything. You know, don't be negative.
Yeah,
and like,
why
everybody should love each other and we should all be supportive. And if somebody is on trying to be better than themselves, you guys, you know, by you guys saying things like that, fuck off. You know, literally, like, that's not how the world works. I'm sorry. Wake the fuck up. You know, you have to stir some shit every once in a while. And that's what this is. It's to put that out there.
It's identifying what they're doing too with the marketing. Like, obviously it works because people are like, yeah, I love Krispy Kreme. Yeah. You know, like, I want that shirt. Or yeah, and then redirecting their mind, you know, as far as the information behind it.
Yes, that's all it is. No one's attacking Krispy Kreme donuts. Nobody is attacking really IFYM. It's really just trying to help inform you. It's because I believe that when whoever created, I don't even know the creator. We should look that up. Could you look that up? Because we've been picking the shit. We've been picking on this person. So that's how much we give a shit. Doesn't matter who it is, whatever. Right? So we're not attacking that person. I'm sure that person, when they put it together, had the same mentality as George, or what's his face, as Glassman did when he put CrossFit together. I think their intentions are right. I think they go into it that they want to create something that is for the masses and help people go in a better direction. Do I think you're better off going to a CrossFit gym than not going to a gym at all? Absolutely, I think that. Do I think you're better off doing IIFYM than absolutely doing nothing at all? Absolutely. But both those things are a step in a direction of becoming, you know, getting into intuitive eating, intuitive working out. And that's really what it's about. It's not about attacking those direct people. It's about making people aware that this dogma or this cult-like way of working out or eating is not the ideal for everybody. And that it should be a red flag for you that anything that's targeted to the masses like that isn't. And that's what we talk about. You talk about us being a dogma. Well, fuck, we can't be a dogma because we encourage people to modify maps. We encourage people to, we don't write a diet. Our nutrition guide is a guide. It's not a meal plan.
You'll never see us write.
You'll never
diet.
Tell us that everybody should be eating like this. No, we encourage you to look at the signs and to follow and define the patterns in your own eating habits. And it's not, we don't ever tell people this is the only way to do anything. We help inform, we help educate. We go through things like the ketogenic diet, and we go through that. We explain to you some of the positive things, but none of it. Like we had to be real careful when we went through that whole process.
No, we had to clearly say that's not the official diet of Mind Pump.
You know what it says? The origins of IIFYM. IIFYM was haphazardly started by a few competitive bodybuilders that grew tired of eating bland and boring food when dieting for a bodybuilding contest.
Yeah. They took one poor relationship with food.
Dear God, it was made by bodybuilders.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like,
no.
Why are they so defensive?
Look, to
a bunch of fucking meatheads came up with it.
And just to circle back around, You know, the truth is, if the three of us trained and ate the way we understand now back in the early days, we would have performed better. We had would have built more muscle.
Oh, I like
would
to, have maintained. I like body to believe I wouldn't have my psoriasis. I'd like to believe a lot of, you know what I'm saying? Like, I seriously
think about the hormone issues we'd had to deal with. Think about all the things we've had to deal with that we probably wouldn't have to deal with today. And think of all the gains we would have made and had now today, at, you know, in our 30s and late 30s. So, no, not only is it not necessary, all that stupid shit, if you are progressing and you're doing all that shitty stuff, you are progressing in spite of it. You're throwing spikes down in front of yourself while you're running, and you're running with bloody feet. Stop throwing those spikes and watch how fast you can run.
That was a weird analogy.
You like that?
I'm going to go with it.
Next up.
In case you were thinking about doing that.
There it is. Melina DePaola.
DePaola.
DePaola?
Yeah, he misspelled it.
Oh, you misspelled it. All right. Epoch. Good, bad, or make any difference?
Epoch was a thing for a little
that was
while,
a
right?
Big, yeah. What year was used what, to highlight that?
What
yeah.
year? It was what maybe
like, what 10 years ago?
Maybe.
No, 5 years ago, maybe.
They made a big deal about it, saying, "Okay, high intensity cardio increases epoch."
Right.
Therefore,
HIIT was definitely branded with that.
Yeah. Therefore, like, you know, you burn more calories after doing that. That's why it's more effective. Now, studies will show that if you utilize high intensity cardio in a proper way, and you compare it to just long distance type cardio, that you will, within a short period of time, because these studies are usually 12, 16 weeks long, you will get leaner more efficiently and effectively with the high intensity cardio. And then they attributed that to epoch. They said, oh, it's because you're burning more calories afterwards. The reality is that's false. The epoch is trivial. It's a very, very small amount. It's not going to make that big of a difference. Here's why the high intensity cardio is superior within those short periods of time. Because it's not superior all the time, by the way. I want to be clear. Your body adapts to certain things, and you can overdo intensity with cardio too. But within those short periods of time, there's a reason why sprinting will get you leaner more efficiently than if you just do long, long distance running. It's not epoch. It's all about adaptation.
Yes.
It's all about the signal you're sending your body.
You probably weren't sprinting before you started doing that.
Yes. And
that's the results you're getting.
Not only that, but the signal that you're sending with interval type cardio, where I go do 10 sets of sprints versus just go run 5 miles. The signal I'm sending my body is not only am I burning calories while I'm doing the sprints, but I'm also telling my body I need strength and power.
Yeah, as I say,
and so I'm going to build or keep muscle.
You're doing something explosive.
Right.
Yeah. That's all it is. That's why it's superior if you do that kind of a head to head comparison.
Exactly. Because let's think of it from mathematical, right? If you, and these are obviously hypothetical numbers, but you put on, because of that, the body will have to adapt. It will have to build more muscle to be explosive like that, because you are putting a different. If you were a marathon runner who now converted over to a sprinter,
you're going
to
build some muscle.
You're going to build some muscle. The body will adapt because it is a new adaptation. It does require more muscle to explode out the gate like that. Therefore, that little bit of muscle that you have now added to your body then in turn burns X amount of calories. This is where they get the science from it. This is where they try and say, it burns X amount of calories more per day when you do this, and it could equal up to X amount more pounds of fat per month. Well, all that shit is bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all splitting hairs, and it all just depends on what they were doing before that. Because if you were somebody who's been a sprinter your whole life, and you tell that person to do HIIT for their cardio now, it's totally different. Now, ask that same sprinter to go do a run for 5 miles, and their body will change more having to run for 5 miles than sprinting all day long, because they're so adapted to that. So it really the argument with epoch to me is, well, it's old.
I think
this
just
is old science.
Really, I think
this is like,
it's like law of thermodynamics kind of old.
Yeah, it's really what I don't like about it, okay, is what it has created. It turned into all these Tabata and all this, everyone talking about HIIT as the best way to do cardio, and this high intensity.
And
everything.
Here we go. We're talking about something else that was created more to kind of fit into like bad lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like these people that were like very sedentary, and then all of a sudden, I only have this short window though during my day, but how do I maximize that?
Yeah.
And so now it's just feeding into this whole process of like, what can I do to completely ramp myself as hard as I can?
Yeah, let's be
in
clear.
This small window.
Let's be very, very clear. High intensity cardio, high intensity interval training, there's a lot less people that are that's appropriate for than steady state.
Yes.
Steady state, I can put a lot of people on steady state and not overdo it, of course, but I could take the average person and tell them to go for a walk. I can't take the average person and say, okay, today we're going to run 10 sprints. because I'm going to tell you something right now, they're probably going to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
I can't take the type A person, high stress, not getting much sleep, and then tell them on top of the resistance training, I want you to 3 days a week do high, you know, high intensity cardio, because I'm going to hammer the fuck out of their body, and it's this over application of intensity.
Fatigue. Yeah, everything is just going to be an overload. Like we talked about, what kind of how much stress is in your life already, and now you're adding an intensified stretch. Yes. It's not something that's benefiting.
I'm more likely to overtrain my body with high intensity cardio than I am with steady state, you know, 30 minutes, you know, 3 days a week. So if I'm training real hard with the weights and I start throwing in all these crazy sprints and stuff, I'm much more likely to overtrain my body.
Well, let's make it clear too. We're not saying that HIIT is bad, you know, or HIIT is.
It's just a place for it.
There is a place, and if you've been listening to Mind Pump for a long time, you've probably heard me talk about how I incorporate it when getting ready for a show. I never do HIIT until it's ready. Until I'm trying to get in like stage ready
like
shape.
The last 2 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the last, it's probably about between weeks three and four is really when I start to incorporate it. But up until that point, I use NEAT as the primary way of in increasing my caloric.
Which is more of the steady state.
Yeah, it's me walking. It's me walking my dogs. It's walking on the treadmill or whatever. It's me not doing cardio. That's not cardio. NEAT is just movement. So I focus primarily on that first. And then the first bit of cardio I do introduce is 10 to 12 minutes of HIIT post workout because I'm thinking of it as something that it's sustainable for me. Okay. Yeah. I'm getting ready for something. I'm going to add this 3 times a week for 12 to 15 minutes of HIIT and then be done with it after that. And then other than that, the rest of the year, I don't want to have to do that to maintain my physique. So I've learned to find my balance nutritionally based off of my NEAT and my weight training, because that's something that's easy for me to consistently maintain through the year.
I think that we stress the hierarchy of you know, NEAT over HIIT, because, you know, if you think about HIIT, for me, it feeds into this punishment mentality. And I feel like, you know, this is where
it cannot be overstated. Absolutely. Yeah,
this is where a lot of people, they get into that intensity trap where, you know, you can do that for a while, but then it's going to be demotivating after a while too. Even just mentally going into the gym, it's like, God, I got to hammer myself every time. And now if I'm doing that too for my cardio, when in fact, all I got to do is up my activity levels and I'm going to get the same desired result. But you know, I just feel like people like lean too much in that direction already, and to really, to pull back and try NEAT and get, you know, get through that part of it and then add, you know, hit in spurts.
I think that's the important thing to note, is that it's just another tool.
Yeah.
It's another tool that why we speak out on it is, and I think it's important to make this clear, is that it's not that we think that it's bad. We know that it's one of those overused tools. Mm-hmm. It's like training to failure, right? I look at, you know, people who talk a lot towards EPOC and HIIT, the same people that talk about training to failure. There's a place for both of them. They are a tool that you can utilize. Most certainly do I not think it is something that you should be doing on a regular basis to maintain your overall health. I think it's something that you intermittently utilize to help you get in shape or get ready for something or train. Like, I would probably use HIIT more for my athletes than anything else.
Of course, because you're looking for, it's all about adaptation.
There's more carryover to what they're doing. You know, it's like if I'm trying to train somebody who is doing basketball where they're going to have to sprint up and down the court 2 or 3 times before they even get a timeout or a break out of bounds, like that person, like that's a perfect person to be training HIIT, because I want their body to be adapted to that so they're efficient when they're playing basketball. But to a person who's trying to get in shape, I don't want to train them to have to do that to be in shape all the time, to go sprint on a fucking treadmill for intervals just so they can get in shape. And then they have that connection to, oh, I need to do these crazy sprinting in order for me to, you know, get myself in this kind of shape. Absolutely not. I don't want to do
that. At the end of the day, it's all about adaptations. Here's what I want you to understand. Whatever you're doing with your exercise, think of the adaptations that you're looking for, or the signals that you're sending with your exercise, and what type of adaptations are going to follow that. If I'm going into my activity, my cardio, if you will, and I need a recovery adaptation, and many of you do. Many of you need to go into your cardio with recuperation and recovery as the form of adaptation you're looking for. Then I'm going to go for a walk. I might go for a walk outside. I might put on my headphones and listen to a podcast or some music and do something that's going to rejuvenate and recuperate, help my body recover from my hard workouts. if I'm going into my cardio with, I need to burn, you know, lots of calories, then that's a different type of adaptation. But am I also at the same time sending the signal to become efficient with my calories? Because that's what a lot of too much long, you know, long duration, low intensity cardio will do. Do I need improved maximal endurance because I'm an athlete? If you approach your training with adaptation in mind and the signals that you're sending through your exercise and how they relate to the adaptation, then you'll find that you'll use these tools appropriately and effectively. You will find that you don't overuse any of these tools because you're going into them with the right approach.
Our next question is from Corey. He's asking about the mind-muscle connection. Did you want me to read the entire thing?
Yeah, could you, Doug? Because I forget exactly what he said.
Okay, so he said, over the years of training, I've tried to take in every bit of knowledge to incorporate into my gym routine. At this point, I'm learning about the mind-muscle connection, thinking of the muscle I want to utilize and moving the weight with that muscle and also keeping it within tension. For example, when doing leg extensions, we normally go from 90 degrees to 0 degrees, flexing the muscle at the top and working the entire quad. Example of mind muscle and tension would be bringing the legs closer together while slightly pointing the toes outward and focusing on the vasta medialis.
Vastus medialis?
Yeah, that one.
Or the medialis.
To move the weight only.
I like that better.
Yeah. While moving the weight, find where the tension is at its greatest, and keeping the movement within that tension range. I guess that's what he's saying. Obviously, the weight would be dramatically lowered. What are your thoughts on this method?
So there's focusing on the connection between your mind and your muscle is another tool that you should learn how to utilize. However, it is a tool that I also see overused quite a bit, especially in the bodybuilding world.
Yes.
Because then it becomes all about isolation and feeling the squeeze in the outer part of my this and isolating this and getting a pump in this one part of my pec or whatever. If you get stuck in that particular mentality, you're going to miss out on these big gross motor movements that are that have huge potential for improving functional strength, building muscle, and burning body fat. I'll give you a good example. If you've got decent biomechanics and you're free of major glaring muscle imbalances and recruitment patterns, and you're doing a barbell squat, it will be detrimental to you to sit there and focus on the quads or whatever muscle group you're trying to focus on while doing your barbell squat. You'll miss out on a lot of the benefits of the squat, and you'll build less muscle from the squat versus going into the squat, getting into your form, getting solid and moving the weight.
God, that's hard for people to absorb right there.
Right, right.
That's, you better repeat that one more time because that just went, because that is the opposite of what the bodybuilder mentality is, because it's all about squeezing and flexing and thinking about that muscle and connecting, mind-muscle connection. And they have put so much emphasis. Here is an example.
Lower, inner, outer.
Yeah, right. Here is an example of
horizontal.
Taking a little bit of good science and running with it. Yeah. You know, there is something to be said about mind-muscle connection. We talk a lot about like sleepy butt syndrome.
Right.
And we talk about how there is
it's a connectivity issue.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a connectivity issue going on with somebody who does squats and cannot feel it in their ass.
Or just can't fire their glutes.
Yes, they can. Okay. Yeah. So guess what? Taking that person and teaching them how to do exactly what you're explaining with the leg extension with their glutes is very important because this person lacks that connection completely. Mm. Do I think you probably have a bad connection to your quads? Absolutely not. Most people are completely quad dominant, and I know Corey, and I know you don't. So for you to sit on a leg extension machine and internally or externally rotate your feet to try and take the vastus medialis through a longer range of motion with lighter weight is going to do way less for you than doing sissy squats or front barbell squats. If you're looking for gains, and the whole reason why you're doing this mind-muscle connection and focusing on the mind-muscle connection, you are losing out on something by focusing on that leg extension instead of doing a big gross motor movement like Sal was saying that's going to show you more gains. Now, if you had a poor connection, which, by the way, I don't know anybody that has a poor connection to their quads, but if you had a poor connection, then I would see regressing you from a barbell squat or regressing you from the big gross motor movement, teaching you isolation movements, which would be your single joint type stuff, like your leg extension, yeah, like a glute kick.
Well, even isolation movements aren't isolated.
Exactly.
You know, and but, so people just don't understand that. Like even in a leg extension, like how many muscles are still tense and active.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't just isolate your quad.
No,
it doesn't work.
No, like, you're not. You know, I actually.
So it's just a smaller gross movement.
I had a guy. I remember a guy worked out at one of the gyms that I managed years ago, and he would deadlift, and it would look kind of funny the way he deadlift. And so I asked him, I said, why are you deadlifting that way?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, dude, you feel it in your lats more. And I mean, talk about missing the point, right? Completely missing the boat and getting so much less of the benefit from a deadlift because he's sitting there trying to fire his lats while he's deadlifting. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're missing a connection to your lats, there's a much better way to isolate and get that connection. But when you're doing a fucking deadlift, you ain't trying to feel it anywhere. You're not trying to feel it in one particular area. You're trying to get perfect biomechanics. You're trying to get solid. You're trying to drive through the floor. You want to be able to lift as much weight as possible with good form. And that's going to give you all the muscle gains, all the benefits of this fantastic, wonderful exercise. If I sit there and try and feel it in a particular area, I have taken a wonderful exercise, an exercise that will fundamentally change how your body moves and the strength and all these wonderful things. And I've taken it and I've made it a shitty exercise. I've literally taken it and destroyed the deadlift.
Well, don't say that. What you've done is you've lessened the impact it could make. Right.
It's why do the deadlift?
Yeah, but doing a deadlift with super slow control, trying to focus on an area, isn't bad. Isn't going to hurt you.
No.
But what it's going to do, it defeats the purpose of that movement.
That's what I'm saying.
That movement is going to benefit your central nervous system and overall gains in muscle growth more than anything else you can do in that entire gym. And you've just lessened that because you've decided to try and focus on the mind muscle connection so much that you've reduced the weight by 50%.
Yeah.
So you can squeeze at the top and squeeze at the bottom and go really slow and controlled.
Yeah, it's really if it's a muscle that's dormant in a major, you know, movement that requires, like, say, your glutes or something in a squat, and you're not feeling that, you know, that's an issue. That's something that you need mind-muscle connection, and you need to focus on that and direct your attention to how do I get these muscles to fire. That's where I see the relevance of the mind-muscle connection.
That's the only time I've ever used it. The only time I've ever really focused on that with any client, even the ones that are trying to build muscle, like tons of muscle or whatever, is if I notice a connection problem, I notice a muscle imbalance, then we regress back. Then it becomes all about mind-muscle connection. You know, if I have someone that's like, man, no matter what I do, my lats don't grow, they're not responding. Well, now I'm going to make sure you can feel your lats first.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go back and do all about mind-muscle connection. We're going to lighten the weight. We're going to squeeze the lats. We're going to isolate them. And now that you can fire them well, shit, now we can go do our barbell rows and pull-ups and dumbbell rows, and they're going to fire the way they should, but we're going to get...
Yeah, you'll feel the lats when you pre-exhaust and you do something like that, like a technique where you're really trying to get the established connection, but now I use the deadlift for what it is.
Well, I'm gonna make kind of an overgeneralization right now, and you guys can correct me if you think I went too far here, but... I think that you doing an isolation movement on anything anterior is almost a waste of time. Posterior, there is where rear delts, your back, your glutes,
based
your
on
hamstrings,
the patterns all day long.
Almost
right?
Like 90% of the people out there have a higher chance that they're going to have a poor connection to your posterior chain.
I'd say that's pretty true.
Than they ever would from their anterior.
A high majority for sure.
So I could definitely see you doing, you know, these like rear delt flies, very slow and controlled, and trying to focus on getting your rear delts to fire because it's a poor connection.
It's a common muscle.
Yeah, it's a common deviation, right? Mm-hmm. It's a common problem that we have with people. Now, if I saw you doing that with a shoulder press, I would think you're an idiot because I don't think you have an issue there. Most people don't have an issue with their anterior delts firing whatsoever. That's a very easy movement for them to engage that. It's not put to sleep like the posterior chain is. So your back types or your back, like let people have a hard time.
Unless you walk backwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Nobody does.
Yeah,
and nobody
picks things
does
up backwards. And yeah,
I mean,
you sit in a bridge position all day.
I want to say 90% just because never in my life have I ever met anybody that was the other way, but it could be higher than that. Even
it,
I mean,
it,
it's
it
you're talking
be
about, I mean, I don't know anybody that has a poor connection to, you know, unless they had some sort of maybe injury that they had that's
right.
caused like a major imbalance. Mm-hmm. So they don't, they're not firing something on the anterior.
No, for the most part, the exercises that you do, the most effective ones are going to be these big movements. And when you do them, focus on your form, focus on, do I have imbalances in terms of recruitment patterns? Am I knees traveling wrong? Are my elbows moving the wrong way? Am my back, you know, curving the wrong way? Whatever. Correct those. Get your biomechanics down. Get solid in it. Then gradually move your weight up. And all these, you know, little muscles that you think you need to focus on, they're all going to develop, man. I'm telling you. Look, you could. Some of the most muscular motherfuckers I've ever met were powerlifters who could give a fuck about isolation movements.
I'll tell you, and I know Corey, so I know like where this is going. So somebody, whether I don't know if he's got somebody who's coaching him right now or buddies or it's just his own research. But, you know, so what he's doing, I know he's looking at his quads and he's thinking that, you know, oh, my sweep is with, you know, the outside of the quad, right? So, or is he working on teardrop? Did he say an internal or external rotate? He said external.
External.
So yeah. Teardrop. So he's like, so he's looking at the teardrop, right? And he's saying like, I want a bigger teardrop and I want more of that. So this is me externally rotating so I can focus on getting that more engaged. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about this on how to build quads, right? When we did a quad episode on how you can use that as a pre-exhaust. So I could see you doing this move that you're talking about with a leg extension, externally rotating, kind of pre-exhausting the vastus medialis, and then going into a front squat and doing that right afterwards to help really put extra emphasis.
Right, it recruits it a bit more.
Yeah, and it's going to fatigue first, right? Yeah. Because you just fatigued it out by doing the leg extensions, then you go over to the front squat. But when you do the front squat, you're not trying to slow down and focus. You're trying to lift maximal weight, you know, within controlled movement. And then you doing that, I think you can get some great gains and you can accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. But sitting on a machine, externally rotating the feet and doing isolation movements to try and grow or develop a part of your quad is going to be inferior all day long to you doing sissy squats, front squats, backloaded barbell squats, you know, lunges, big gross motor movements. Those big movements are going to develop that teardrop. Even if you don't feel it the most in that teardrop, it still will develop that teardrop more than anywhere else. And if you want to try and focus on parts of the quadricep like that by pre-exhausting first, yeah. I could see that.
I mean, the VMO, what she's talking about, what they call a teardrop, is many times inhibited from injury. So if you've been injured in your knee, sometimes it contributes to the way the patella tracks. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's most active when your leg is fully extended. So if this is an area that's not firing because of knee injury,
very good point.
Then you may want to do the leg extension, focus on the squeeze at the top and hold that squeeze and really squeeze the shit out of it. Like Adam's saying, superset and then go to your barbell squat. Mm-hmm. And that'll help it fire. But again, if you're otherwise healthy and you haven't had past knee injury or problems, it's probably firing okay. It's probably just your genetics, and you're better off just focusing on overall building size in your quadriceps.
And I'm glad you said that too, because I think this is where the bodybuilder guys and guys that are working on building these aesthetic physiques, this is where all that used to drive me crazy is the information they get. They would see a part, they'd be coaching a kid and they'd be like, hey, Corey, your teardrop is pretty weak. We need to start doing some external rotating when you do these leg extensions. And he starts prescribing that into his workouts all the time. And I'm just like, first of all, that's retarded. Okay. What that really is, what you're going to do by doing that, and you're eliminating other movements that could really grow your legs, you're wasting your time. You're spinning your wheels. You're going to be far better off incorporating the big gross motor movements. If you want to use it as pre-exhaust, that's fine. You can do that. You can add that into it. But by you stopping doing the big movements and doing that because somebody told you that's going to focus on that area and that'll help the mind muscle connections. Your genetics are a big reason why your legs look the way they look, and doing the big movements are going to grow the entire leg more than anything else.
Exactly. Hey, listen, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll win a free Mind Pump t-shirt. Also, do not forget to check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, and that's where I have some of those controversial posts. You can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam and Justin at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.